Welcome to Behind the Smiles with your host, the Queen of Yappy herself, Dr. Gina Dorfman. This is a podcast where we interview some of the biggest leaders in dentistry, learn their stories, and share their motivation. Brought to you by Yappy, an automated paperless software for dentists and their teams. Book a demo today at yappyapp.com.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Behind the Smiles. I'm your host, Dr. Gina Dorfman, and I'm here today with an inspiring lady and a female dentist, Dr. Mona Patel. Mona, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I am doing very well, and I'm so excited to be on your show and to be talking to you.
Me too. We were just saying that this was a long time coming, and I'm finally excited to have you here. And we were just talking about how we were given a gift of time because, you know, with the pandemic on us and the stay-at-home order, we have all this time to finally catch up on some projects and take care of ourselves. And we were talking a little bit about how we take care of ourselves. So I have so many questions for you. But before we get started, would you mind sharing a short bio with us?
Oh, absolutely. So I've been a dentist for almost 30 years. I actually graduated in England in 1991. I went to dental school at the age of 17. I was born in Africa, Uganda, and we left as refugees because of Idi Amin. And my father was studying medicine in England, so we came over to meet him. I graduated from Queen Elizabeth Dental School and the University of Birmingham, and I was working there for a little bit. And being a good Indian girl, I listened to my parents, and they said, it's time for you to get married. So they introduced me to lots of suitors, and one of them actually lived over in America. So in 1992, I got married at the age of 23 and moved to America. And I applied to one dental school, University of Pennsylvania, and was accepted, thank goodness. And I started dental school here and did the PASS program, 1993 to 95, graduated in 95 at the age of 27. So then I associated at a practice, and they really brought me on. It was a two dentist practice, and they brought me on because one of the partners was having a heart transplant and could not practice anymore. So they brought me on to take care of his side of the practice. And in 3 years, unfortunately, he couldn't practice. He's still surviving, which is awesome. But the senior partner wanted to sell his practice. So after 4 years, I became the owner. And ever since then, I've been practicing there. It'll be my 25th year at my practice.
That's incredible. Wow, what a story. So you mentioned earlier that you have two daughters. I think you said 24 and 20.
Yes.
Do you encourage them to go to dental school?
I did. I tried at the beginning, but unfortunately they were not interested, and they have their own journey. I have my 24-year-old is in finance and has been working for 2 years and is making a great career for herself. And my younger daughter, Maya, is at University of Pittsburgh and hoping to go into medicine. So I've got two really driven girls. I'm not sure where they get that from.
It's surprising, right?
Right.
May I ask what your husband does?
My husband, his background was electrical engineering, and he became a director of procurement at a company in Philadelphia, Comcast. And about 2 years ago, in order for us, we were really taking a stock of where our life was. And I, after practicing for 23 years, I really wanted some work-life balance. So he came on board and became my business manager so that I could really concentrate on patient experience and clinical care, which is what I'm passionate about.
This is really awesome. So this is a question that I have to ask, because now I work with my husband. When I started my practice, my husband, who actually went to law school, he's not a dentist, but when I started my practice, he was helping me a lot. And he, for a while, he just stayed working at the practice, helping me build it. And then when we started the software company, he sort of switched to working at the software company, and he's now running the sales team and the business development. So I work with my husband a lot, and I love it. But I also know there are a lot of couples that say that working with your spouse is difficult. What is your experience like working with your spouse?
Initially, it was difficult because there weren't any boundaries. You know, we were bringing it, you know, into the house and not leaving it at work. And everything that we did was revolving around our plans and work, which was fine. But after a while, I realized, like, nope, you know, this is not good. So we became very conscious of developing some boundaries. And at work, I tease my husband. I'm like, at work, you can't listen to me with husband ears. You have to listen to me as a team member, and vice versa. So that was one thing that we put into place. And then a hard stop, you know, as soon as we get home, that's our hard stop. You know, we are not allowed to talk about, you know, the plans and work for the evening. And then on, you know, a Saturday morning, we'll have a business meeting, and we limit our time to that. Otherwise it takes away the, I guess, the excitement and the, you know, the fun in the relationship when it's all about work.
You're so right. And I need to create this in my life, because honestly, I feel like sometimes life is happening at work and sometimes work is happening at home. And now I, like, everything is happening at home, of course, but boundaries is not something that I'm very good at. But what I'm hearing is that your life doesn't happen to you. You drive it. You're in charge. How do you make it work? I mean, how do you, you know, like, even with boundaries, you said we're not allowed to talk about this. So if one of you, is there like a safe word that, like, okay, one of you starts talking about work because it's on your mind, and then the other one sort of says, nope, it's not Saturday morning yet, we're not doing this? Or how do you plan it out, and then how do you execute it?
You know, it's in the last year, I've been doing this really fantastic program with this lovely doctor. Her name's Fern White. So I've learned about loving boundaries. And, you know, number one, knowing that it's okay to have those and to put them in place lovingly. So when I'm, you know, setting for myself a boundary, and, you know, I'm really looking at the other person and saying, so how important is this to you? Is this okay to shelve until our time that we've put aside? Or is this something that needs to be addressed right now? And a lot of times, and I apply this to my team members as well, because, you know, when we're in the office as dentists, we walk in and, you know, how many questions do we get asked every day? And we don't have to answer them all at that time, because sometimes when you're answering in the heat of the moment, you're so reactive, and maybe that's not what you need to say at that time. So I've just learned to be able to ask, how important is that particular question to that person? Do they need that answer right there and then? Or can they wait until I'm in a better place, or I'm in a totally present mindset for them?
I love this. And you're right, we are reactive. And, you know, it's a lot of times our employees walk in and they ask a question when the question popped into their mind. And it's not necessarily the best time for either one of us to have that discussion. It could be, you know, Can I have a raise? Can I take two days off to start school? And it's like, well, you know, I don't know what I'm paying you. I don't know what the schedule is like. I really need to think about it. And a lot of times you're right, it's a knee-jerk reaction rather than a thoughtful answer that both of us deserve. But I think it's really tough to be, do you ever get pushback? Because I think it's difficult without having that understanding of where it's coming from. I think it might be difficult for some people to accept that, you know, did she just blow me off or did I?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's always going to be pushback until they realize that you're actually prioritizing them. Because, you know, if my office manager or my daughter or my husband or my friend come to me and I am not in that mindset, I'm not prioritizing them at all. So when I actually, you know, look at them and say, hey, I understand that you have this pressing need to talk to me. And if you're able to shelve it, then I will be so much more mindful and present for you. And then you'll have all of me. And we can really get to the bottom of this. But if I answer you right now, I don't think I'm really, really listening. And you'll get a half-ass answer. So what would you prefer? And that's really how I approach everything.
I absolutely love it. And, you know, I cannot tell you how many times I've been in this situation where I'm like in the middle of an email or I'm typing something and someone walks in and says, are you busy? And, you know, yeah. I mean, being a little bit of a smart ass, you know, I always... I'm never busy. I'm sitting here doing nothing, waiting for you to come in and ask me a question. And a lot of times they start talking and I'm still in the middle of a sentence that I was typing. And I've even caught myself not really like, I'd be like, okay, wait, let me just finish this sentence. But my attention, and I just even knowing how a brain works, we're not really multitasking. You know, brain is not capable of multitasking. When we think we're multitasking, our neurons are just switching really quickly.
Correct.
Different
I agree.
Activities. And yeah, I mean, we have, instead of attention, we have lack of attention and we don't give ourselves fully to either the person that we're talking to or whatever it is that we were doing before they walked in. So I absolutely love this. Now let me ask you a question. How are you doing with all this that's going on right now? I mean, this is a crazy time that we live in. And I know a lot of people are struggling. And I don't want to say financially because, you know, I have no idea what's going to happen financially for a lot of us because it seems like maybe things are going to be resolved. But emotionally, I know a lot of people are struggling. But you actually have a pretty uplifting sort of outlook on this. Can you share it with us?
No, absolutely. This is a terrible time and it's a lot of fear and uncertainty and it can be so overwhelming. And, you know, a lot of us are talking about it. It's like a grieving process. I'm at a stage of acceptance and I actually got there pretty quickly. And the reality is that we have to accept that things are different now. And when we do that, we can either stay anxious about what we've lost, or we can look to the future and look at this gift of time and look at what we can do that when we come back to dentistry, which is going to be very different, how can we slingshot ourselves back into recovery with our team really quickly? So what are the things that I am needing to do to help my team move forward, to move myself forward when we get back? That's what I'm focusing on because I know that I'm not going to be able to have the same practice that I did 4 weeks ago. It's different. My patients are going to be different. And I'm also understanding that this, you know, this is actually a gift of time. I'm having all this time off where I never had this much time off. The last time was my maternity leave 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even then I was still like worried about my practice. And here I'm worried about my practice, but we're all in the same boat. There's a there's a certain comfort knowing that we're all in the same boat. And, you know, let's use this time to maybe make dentistry even better.
I like this. So what are some of the things that you're focusing on that that you feel are going to be useful in the long term as we, I hate to use the word rebuild our practices, but I think in a way we're going to at least revamp our practices in some way, right?
Right. So, you know, the first thing is that my team is very important to me. I've worked really hard over the last few years to create a phenomenal group of people who are just as passionate about patient care. So I don't want to lose them. So I want to give them safety. I want to give them a feeling of belonging and some certainty. And so I have created, you know, a private Facebook group with my team that we do our lives on, that we have conversations and we're doing Zoom meetings so that we're just staying in touch, not necessarily talking about work, but just how checking in with each other and giving each other moral support. Then, you know, moving forward, working on how do we make our patients feel safe? What are we going to have to do in our practice to make them feel safe? You know, what is our reception area going to look like? What is our check-in process? Our, you know, checkout process going to look like? How is it going to be at the front desk? What are the operatories going to look like? How much time are we going to be scheduling for patients? Because now with all the PPE and how we are having to break down rooms and transport instruments from the room to the steri area, those are the projects I'm working on. The economic aspect, our treatment plans are going to look different. You know, our patients are going to have a different view on finances and treatment. So we really have to work on looking at being able to sequence treatment plans so it's affordable for patients. What is a safe holding pattern to put them in until they can move forward? What are the financial options we can give them? Are we going to reintroduce payment plans? We've gotten away from all of that. You know, we are a fee-for-service practice and we were, you know, getting a payment at the time of scheduling. Is that going to change? Are my financial forms going to change? So those are the things I'm looking at so that I can be ready for when I go back. Electing one person to contact all the patients who've had to be rescheduled and who don't have appointments. So, you know, it's really planning for getting back and moving fast.
That's excellent. And, you know, there's a lot of conversation whether our PPEs are going to change and our sterilization procedures are going to change. So obviously, I mean, there's still a lot we don't know. I'm actually puzzled by how little we know about this virus and the mode of transmission. And we keep hearing different things. And so I'm hoping that we're going to get some pretty good answers really soon. But I know that financially, I think it's going to be tough going back for a lot of people. And I'm hoping that economically we can recover quickly. But I'm also hoping that this, in a way, creates appreciation for medicine in general. You know, dentistry is part of medicine. And, you know, all this conversation about essential versus not essential. But when the patients are reaching out to me because they have a toothache or because they you know, something even very small. I mean, I had a little boy who took a BB gun pellet to his teeth, unfortunately. I mean, it's just like, what a terrible time for that to happen. But generally, most of the emergencies that people contacted me, they were fairly minor, nothing life-threatening. But people were really appreciative of us being able to, you know, somehow help them out. And we're looking at teledentistry right now as one way to triage patients. So there's definitely some change, and I'm hoping that we're going to have more appreciation for not just the movie stars and the athletes and all of those people who we find fascinating, but those who are saving our lives, right?
I agree. I mean, our physicians and doctors, I mean, they're on the front lines. I've made a point of calling 15 patients a day just to check in on them. And the first people on my list were my patients who were nurses or physicians. And I checked in on them and offered them all of the PPE I have in my office, because they're doing an amazing job. They really are.
That's an incredible idea to reach out to your patients in this way, personally, to check in on them. I actually had, so we have neighbors. We lived in our house since 2003, so like 17 years. And we have neighbors across the street. We used to call them Republicans because I think we still call them the Republicans because George Clooney lives not too far away from here. And every time there's an election, he has like a Democratic fundraiser. And then immediately after that, the Republicans have a Republican fundraiser. And so over the years, we started calling them the Republicans. When all this happened, my husband and I were walking the dog, and we decided to stop by and, obviously very carefully, initiating any physical contact, but we just asked them if they needed anything, going to the grocery store, anything at all. And turns out they have names. They're not just the Republicans. They're Linda and Skip, which, like, I don't know if you can have a more Republican name than Linda.
I love it.
But it's just, and they sent us a card and to thank us for checking in on them. And this is different. That, we have some time to be human, and I like that.
I agree. I love it. Every day I've been taking a walk in my neighborhood, and just yesterday, and it was the nicest feeling. I'm walking, and up the road is a family with three kids, and they are filming each other on their phones, throwing frisbees and doing basketballs. And they shout across, "Hey, can you follow us?" And I'm like, "Follow you?" And they're like, "Yes, we're on YouTube called Bro Fun. We want people to subscribe to us." So I'm like, "Absolutely." And it was so cute.
I know.
And you're walking and people tend to smile more because they're looking for that human contact, right? And just shouting across the street, "How are you? How are you doing? Do you need anything?" It just is as much as this is a very hard time for all of us, there are so many amazing things that are happening with human contact and, actually taking the time and you're hearing yourself and you're understanding that we're so busy in our day-to-day life, and this time out, we can reconnect with ourselves, which allows us to reconnect with all those around us in so many different ways.
Yeah, you're so right. You're so right. And my kids, so my daughter is 11. She's about to turn 12, and my son is 15. And obviously they're home, and thank God the homeschooling part. My son is self-sufficient, but the homeschooling part with my daughter was a little tough for me. What I find is that, now they're helping with chores and we do things together, and a couple of times when I woke up and they were already downstairs making their own breakfast. And I think it's very interesting how we're reconnecting and learning to do new things. And my husband bought me a self cleaning, mopping robot vacuum cleaner, which normal under normal circumstances wouldn't be a good gift. I get a blender for my birthday, but I cannot tell you how excited I was about that iRobot. And we just watched it circle the ground floor yesterday cleaning. We're doing different things and not wearing makeup. We were talking about that and letting our skin rest. So a lot of things are rejuvenating, and hopefully we're going to take the best advantage of it. Now, one thing that whenever I lecture, and I usually lecture on team building and business topics. Last time I was speaking at the Voices of Dentistry, and there were probably maybe a couple hundred people in the room, and I said, can you raise your hand if you have job descriptions in your practice? And maybe like handful of hands went up. And this is the kind of time when we can do things that we never have time for, whether they're personal there are ways that we distress and take care of ourselves or maybe business. So I think you're right. There's definitely, a positive side to this.
I agree. I mean, I'm very much like your boho hippie, right? I love life. I love yoga. I love meditation, but I also have a very strong yang side. You know, it's in the business of doing and organizing, especially because we're business owners and leaders to our team. So I definitely, for the first week of when this all started, I had no schedule and was feeling just all over the place. And now I truly believe in scheduling in, because when you multitask, you really don't get anything achieved. I know that I don't. Some people are very lucky and they can do it, but I go off on tangents. So I make sure that I wake up consistently on it at a certain time, do what I need to do to start my day. And I love meditating and journaling and being very intentional about what I want to achieve. I use Brendon Burchard's planner. It's an amazing, amazing tool. And then I schedule 30 minutes on email, an hour on practice development, an hour webinar. And I'm really trying to get my dental sleep practice in place. I've been doing it for a year and a half, and just am very passionate about being a sleep advocate for my patients, and really working on how, when I go back, what is my process going to be? How is it going to change? What can I do to help people? So I schedule in times for the projects I want to do, and then I have a hard stop where I finish and it's family time. And it seems like for now it's working for me.
I think this is incredible. This is one of the things that I always want to do is, I can be pretty intentional about certain things, but I'm not very good about scheduling my time. And you're absolutely right. I go on tangents. I start doing something and then my mind switches to something else. And then I start doing this other thing. And very frequently I have a bunch of unfinished projects floating around. And I think if you ask, and I have a pretty big team, but I think if you ask them, they'll tell you that I am often the bottleneck for a lot of the projects that happen, because they do their part and then they push it off to me for whatever. I might need to read something and just to sort of sign off on something, or maybe I need to provide some piece of content that I promised to provide to them. And then it just gets stuck there. And I think part of the problem is that attempting to multitask and do many things, because I don't think when you're doing a lot of things at once, you're doing anything with full attention.
Right. There's a great book out there called Game Changer by David Osprey. And one of the tips in that book is to, in your day, pick three things that you want to get achieved. From all the list of things that are running in your mind, pick three things and achieve those. And what you'll see at the end of the day is the other things that were on your list actually just go away because they weren't really that important.
I love that. I love that. You're right. Whatever you say yes to is better be important, because when you say yes to one thing, you're saying no to something else. And that something else might be just as important or even more important. So we have to be mindful of what we take on. So you're an educator. Tell me about the clinical mastery.
Oh my goodness. That is I just love clinical mastery because they really changed my practice and the way that I view my patient care. I've been practicing for about 25 years in America at my practice. And about 7 or 8 years ago, I wanted to elevate my patient care. So I went on a long CE journey, with my previous employer who I bought the practice from was Panky trained. So I had a lot of Panky based information from practicing with him. And I went on to do all of the spear workshops. And I was looking for a really practical application of all this comprehensive knowledge, right? And clinical mastery offered this in a over-the-shoulder, in-the-operatory course where I could go in into the op and watch someone like John Nosty or Jason Olitsky prep teeth, temporize, and then go back and watch them insert. So I went to those courses and I was like, wow, even though I think I know a lot of stuff, these guys know how to teach. So then I'm like, even though I've done so many occlusion courses and I feel really confident about it, I'm going to just sign up for their occlusion courses. And I started to go through the curriculum and I was just loving it. And within 6 months, they asked me to come on and mentor for them. And that's how I started with them. And when other doctors and colleagues asked me, well, what's the difference between spear and Pankey and clinical mastery and COIS? And I'm like, all of these institutions are really fantastic, right? But, you know, going to COIS or going to Pankey is like going to like an Ivy League school. It's like going to Harvard or Yale. And clinical mastery is like going to a really freaking awesome state school where you're so street smart and get so many good practical tips that you can actually get your cases going because it's so practical. So that's my journey with them. And I've been, you know, I started learning with them back in 2016 and I've been a mentor with them since 2017. And I just love going to the courses and interacting with all the dentists who have signed up and watching them start their journey and just to have better patient care, you know, and you can help that one person who's going to go back and help so many people and we're going to impact so many lives, right? It's a ripple effect. So that's why I do what I do for them.
Yeah, this is a great point. There are a lot of great CEs, CE courses out there, but I find that sometimes either I take a course and it's a good teaser, but there's just not a lot of practical information that I can go back and incorporate. Like I feel I need something else in order to be able to really implement it. Or it is so high up there that it really, it's hard for me to find a way to apply it in my practice, right? Which, you know, most of the time it's bread and butter dentistry. It's the regular right. stuff. And,
yeah. I'm like a visual learner, Gina. I learn visually. So if I see something, I get it. But when I'm sitting there reading about it and hearing about it, I get it, but I don't get it. And visually seeing it happen makes a huge difference. You know, I mean, I've learned about equilibration and all of those things, and it still used to make me, you know, clench in my stomach, like, oh my God, oh my God. And then I got to see it and do it and see it with a group, and it was great.
Excellent point. That's, for me, that was the problem with dental school, because we had a lot of theory. But where I went to dental school, I went to USC. We just didn't have a lot of practice. We didn't get right. to do a lot of hands-on dentistry. And so when I graduated, I had this feeling like I really didn't know anything. And what was interesting about that is not only I was correct, I had no idea how little I knew and how much more there was to what we do. And it's really, you know, not until later in your career, or at least for me, it happened maybe six, seven years into my career where I started to realize that, when I started to see my own failures is when I started to realize, okay, there's more to it. And then the more you learn, you know, the more you learn about occlusion and you start to understand where you had failed before. And then sleep apnea. I got into sleep apnea a few years ago. And for me, it was a huge aha moment, because once you start seeing it,
me too. It's amazing. I'm so glad that you shared that, because it is like the missing piece for your patient's health. Because you still, even though I knew about occlusion and TMD and wear and, you know, acidic erosion and all of those things. There was something missing, and it's sleep apnea.
Yeah. And once it's like one of those things, you can't unsee it. And I don't remember, I don't know how many times I now said to a patient, you know, this is not a diagnosis until we do the tests and, you know, and obviously we need to get your physician on our team. But I have this feeling that this is what's going on. And this is the reason why you have so many dental issues on top of everything. And, you know, it's just, I've had those patients that were in my practice for many, many years, and we were doing everything we could to help them, and somehow they were still deteriorating. And then this, you know, and all of a sudden, a couple of years later, you're like, oh my God, the scalloped tongue, and like all of those signs.
I know. Oh my gosh.
Right? So tell me about your journey with sleep apnea. How did you get into this? When did you study? Like what was your process?
You know, I mean, I started to, it became, you know, came onto my radar maybe 3 or 4 years ago, but I was like, yeah, I'll learn about it. I'll get to it. And then around that 2 year mark, 2 years ago, I just thought I was getting older. I think I was about 48 and I was so tired and my blood tests were off and, you know, I'm menopausal and they're putting me on thyroid medication and they're putting me on metformin for prediabetes and progesterone. And I'm like, oh, I guess this is it. This is what growing old is. But I was so tired, so tired. And then my husband, God bless him and I love him so much, but he kicked me out of the bedroom. I noticed he kicked me out. He didn't leave. He kicked me out for snoring, right? Yeah. And it's so embarrassing to say you snore. Like as women, it's like, oh my God, no, you can't really say that. But I'm being very vocal about the fact that I snored so loudly. And I actually have a tape of me snoring that I share with my female patients so they don't feel embarrassed when we talk about it. But I was snoring and he kicked me out. And after 2 weeks, I'm like trying to deny that I had a problem. But after 2 weeks, when you're not sleeping with your partner, you feel very disconnected, right? So you feel that something's, because traditionally we're all supposed to, you know, sleep together and have a close relationship and all of those things, right? So I was like, wow, something's going on. And at the same time, luckily, I was at a sleep course. I had signed up to do a sleep course, finally. And at that sleep course, it was with Sleep Group Solutions, and they actually tested me, because you know, they bring these a number of home sleep tests and you can volunteer. And I was diagnosed with mild obstructive sleep apnea. And at the same time, I had left joint TMD that always hurt no matter what appliance therapy I did for myself. And I know how to make appliances and I know how to diagnose TMD, but I was still uncomfortable. And lo and behold, I had mild OSA. So I treated myself with an appliance, and my first appliance was a simple EMA. And the first night I put it in, I was like, the next morning I was like, oh, this is what it feels like to sleep. Oh my goodness. And I've made, over this journey, I've made 7 to 8 different appliances for myself because I wanted to try them all out. And I'm currently living with my ProSomnus, which I love. Once I started to feel better and understood the importance on my health and my general well-being and my brain fog and my mental focus, I'm like, oh my gosh, and TMD, oh my gosh, I need to know more about this. So I started to learn and I started to apply it to my team first. And now I have 5 people on my team. 4 of them have various sleep-related breathing disorders. I have one with mild, 2 with moderate, and 1 with upper airway resistance syndrome. So they're all in appliances. I have my husband, myself, and my 2 daughters. 3 out of the 4 have sleep-related breathing disorders.
Wow.
And how could I not bring this to my patients? So now, after 1.5 years, I would say about 30% of my practice is dental sleep medicine. And I'm just moving forward with wanting to, you know, convert it to more and more of helping patients recognize that this is a silent condition. And we don't think of sleep as being something that is going to affect our health like this, but it does. It affects every part of us, our hormone regulations and our, I mean, I had a patient just a month before all of this happened, and we put him into a nice sleep appliance. He came back after 4 weeks and he was so different. And he's like, "Doc, you'll never guess what." And I'm like, "What's going on?" He's like, "I'm off my Ritalin." So yeah, that's my why.
that's absolutely incredible. And what I found is that it's a lot more common because once you start seeing it, you see more and more of it, and we don't realize how many people are affected. And I think that most of us take snoring as something that, hey, you know, we just snore, it's normal. And it doesn't have to be. So if someone wanted to get into sleep apnea, what are some of the maybe courses that you recommend? How does one learn more about this?
Absolutely. The way I started was I started to get some foundational courses in place. And there are some amazing people out there teaching. And I'm affiliated with Sleep Group Solutions, who have a 2-day course, and they're awesome. But you also have women like Erin Elliott with 3D Dentist, who does an amazing 2-day foundational course. There's Meghna Dasani, who has a 2-day foundational course. And there's also Clinical Mastery, who has a great instructor, Sam Kress, who does a 2-day foundational course. So the way that I looked at it was I did one 2-day foundational course and I'm like, okay, I want to know more. And so I did actually Erin's course, I did Sam Kress's course, and I did Sleep Group Solutions course. And I used that to be able to educate my team and implement the process into my office. But once I got started, I wanted to know more. So I was lucky enough to spend with, I'm part of a Pankhi-based study group in my area. So we were lucky enough to have Steve Carstensen come on for 2 days, and there's 13 of us, and I got to hear him speak about sleep dentistry. Through the same club, I got to see John Droder for 2 days to talk about TMD and sleep dentistry. And then I signed up for a mini sleep residency with Nearman Practice and Mayor Patel in Atlanta. And it is, again, once you start learning about something like sleep apnea and how we can help patients, you really can't stop because there's just so much to know. But you can get yourself some foundational knowledge so that you can create awareness for your patients. And then you can reach out to sleep physicians in your area and start educating them on how you can help them be part of their team and what you can do with appliance therapy. And then once you get started, you're just going to want to know more. And you just keep looking for those courses that elevate you.
Absolutely. And I love that you keep bringing up your team. You mentioned earlier on that your team is important to you and that you built an amazing team. And that's how I feel. You know, I have a pretty big team at my dental practice. We are at 33 people now.
Wow.
I require an entourage to get anything done. I don't know if and we have quite a few at my software company. We're at around 50 now, just under 50. We lost a couple of people, unfortunately. But you know, once you start getting really great people on your team, you know, they become everything. And I know this is a really tough time for them. And I just love how you bring them up, whether you talk about, you know, sleep appliances, or you're talking about boundaries. I mean, pretty much anything we've talked about throughout the course of this podcast today, you brought up your team, and I just think it's amazing. But what I'm curious about is, what is your leadership style like? How do you go about building this amazing team that you're so proud of?
Wow. Well, it's a long journey, Gina. I mean, I think I've made every single mistake there is under the sun. But I think a big factor was trust, because, you know, when you're building a team, you have to trust your team to be able to do or complete the task or the objective that you gave them. But you have to trust that they're going to do it their way and it will still be okay. So that was a biggie for me, just, you know, letting go of control and allowing that trust in them. One of the things I did do was, have you heard of love languages? You know, it's this, what's your love language? And usually you apply it to you and your spouse. Well, I applied it to my team and I had them do, instead of the DISC, because I've worked with the DISC profile and all, but I actually had them do the love languages to find out how they communicate that way. And, you know, one of my team members, Renee, was like words of validation. And two of my team members were acts of service. So I'm like, okay, so this is how they can, this is now I know how to appreciate them. So with Renee every day is I'll go up and I'll just chit chat with her and tell her how amazing she was today or yesterday, or how great that the way she handled the patient and their questions. Acts of service is doing something for a team member. So like my Twee is my sleep coordinator, and she loves food. So I bring her food to show her I care for her. So these are the things I did to show them that I valued them as human beings. And I actually listened to them instead of, you know, what I learned a long time ago was to stop talking.
I'm laughing because it's so true. I mean, we talk at people, we talk at our patients. We sort of get into that mode where we come to work, we look at x-rays, we walk into the room, we tell patients what we see, we tell them what they need to have done, we bring them to the front, we tell the scheduling coordinator what needs to be done, and that's our day. And sometimes we answer questions, but we don't do a lot of listening. And I love what you said about love languages, because one of the things that I hear a lot from, even I've heard it from my own team, and just like you, I've made every single mistake under the sun. I'm still making them. I'm really one of my strengths, really. Is the, you know, they say, you know, that they don't feel appreciated. And for a lot of leaders and bosses, it's like, well, why do they not feel appreciated? Because, you know, we do all those things for them. We pay for their CEs, we pay them well, they get health insurance, and they have the party, and we have a team bonus. And like, how can they not feel appreciated? But the truth is that they all feel appreciated in their own way. And this is
correct.
Describe the love language. What is going to make me feel like I'm being valued is different from someone else. And you just touched on that. And I think it is so, so valuable.
Right. It's, you know, it's coming away from that mindset, which I had, you know, 10 years ago. Oh, you know, my team, like, I pay them so well. I have a 401k plan. I take care of their health. I give them, you know, 2 weeks paid holidays and 2 weeks vacations. And like, why are they not like happy, you know? But the like you said, the reality is it's that that dehumanizes them. We just assume that people work for money, and that's not true. I know I don't work for money. I mean, I know that sounds very idealistic, but I work because I love helping people. And so I can have a team member that is totally financially driven. And once I know that, great. But I can have a team member who is the same as me and works because they want to help people. And I need to know that so that I can motivate that person.
Very interesting. And if we want to learn a little bit more about love languages, I believe there's a book, right?
There's a book. There's a book. And actually, if you go online and you type in love languages into Google, it'll take you right to a quiz. And I had, and my team loved doing it. We actually had a team meeting and we talked about it, and I, you know, got them to do the quiz, and, you know, we all learned how each other thinks that way. So they know that, you know, my love language is acts of service. So they know, like, you know, sometimes I'll have a flower on my desk, or, you know, someone will come in and rub my shoulders while I'm working on my computer after a tough case. You know, it's stuff like that we do for each other. Yeah, that makes, you know, because that's your family. That's your family at work.
I love that. And so sometimes I come in and I find a cup of venti pike from Starbucks, and I'll put right. a little note on it that says, like, have a great day. And I always, like, I don't know, it's a cup of coffee. It's not like I can't buy it for myself, but sometimes it almost like brings tears to my eyes, because I feel like they were going to work to earn that paycheck, whatever, but they stopped by to get themselves coffee and they thought of me and they bought me coffee. Right. And they went an extra step to write something nice on a sticky note and leave it for me to find in the morning. And I just think it's really touching, and it makes me feel like maybe among all those things that I'm doing wrong, somewhere I've done something
right.
We're
doing something right. Exactly. No, I love it. I love it. I love it.
Well, Mona, unfortunately, we're at the end of the hour, and I know that you probably, like, we're 1 minute past the hour, and I feel like there's probably something else on your schedule that I have to let you go and get started with. But I really appreciate your time. I appreciate your wisdom. I honestly feel, so I'm in California. I'm a few hours behind you, and I woke up not too long ago, and I had my coffee and a quick workout, and that was nice, but I just feel better after talking to you. I can't explain this. I don't know whether it's your voice or it's the things that you said, but somehow I feel more calm, and I really appreciate that. And I can see how people in your life appreciate you so much. So thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and your experiences. You know, maybe when we have some time in the future, maybe we'll chat a little bit more about how we're coming back and how we're changing our practices to make up for the lost time.
Absolutely. I would love to do that. And I really appreciated spending some time with you. I love your energy, Gina. You're amazing.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day. Enjoy your time and stay safe.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Smiles. Today's episode was brought to you by Yappy, an automated paperless software for dentists and their teams. You can learn more about Yappy by visiting www.yappyapp.com. If you have any suggestions for future guests, or if you have any questions for us, you can reach out to Dr. Gina directly. Send your email to drgina@yappycentral.com. You can also find the email in our show notes. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review on iTunes or on any of the apps that you're listening from. It's greatly appreciated. And as always, thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode.